to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One racing here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly coming to you once again from the Vivid Seats studio again this week. And, well guys, I'm trying to get the timing for FP2 here at the Japanese Grand Prix, and it says there's like a couple of minutes left. I thought, hey, this is going to be kind of cool. I can actually do a show while something's happening, but it's kind of glitching. It's going all over the place. No times, no anything. So much for my brilliant idea. But hey, back to Formula One racing this week, and I have to admit, I'm a little bit shocked that we only have four races left after this weekend. We have Brazil, Mexico, the U.S. say we have Abu Dhabi coming up at the end of the season in at about 6 weeks' time, and I don't know what it is. Perhaps I'm sort of stuck in that sort of third of the way of the through of the season, that sort of Monaco Canadian Grand Prix time of the year. For some reason, I have this mental block. I think that there's still like about a dozen races to go, and well, that's clearly not the case, but well, let's just get right into the show this week. There's obviously a lot to talk about. I mean, not only is there a lot going on the track, obviously, but off of the track, there's a possible typhoon to deal with. It looks like it might hit Japan in the next couple of days, and we only know how that will impact the Grand Prix, plus the Rugby World Cup, and of course, well, life in general. I mean, sounds like it's a pretty nasty piece of business. So, I mean, at least hopefully the race can get off, but we will just have to wait and see. So, as we do always around here, why don't we just get into the or just refresh our memories as to where we sit with the standings. And I thought it was a little bit kind of funny today. I didn't actually see it, but I think it was an article on Sky Sports. I saw the tweet or a Facebook post or something said, I think it was something to the effect of the different combinations that Hamilton needs to win out or win the world championship. I mean, obviously, it's just a foregone conclusion, and it has been for a very long time. I mean, Lewis way out in front, 322 points. He's not ahead of himself in the world championship, although he might as well be. Valtteri Bottas is teammate, second with 249. Charles Leclerc, third, 215 points. 3 points ahead of Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. Sebastian Vettel rounding out the top five with 194 points. And on the constructor side, again, there's a little doubt who's going to win the constructors again this year. Mercedes, 571 points. Ferrari, 409. Red Bull Racing, 311. McLaren, 101. And they're looking good to hang on to that fourth spot in the constructors, even though there's still several races to go. And then Renault rounding out the top five with 68 points. But hey, here we go. We do have some timing coming up. And Sebastian Vettel has gone purple in sectors 1 and 2 at FP3. Actually, he's just set a fastest lap of 130.386. So there you go. Maybe I'll check in a little bit as time goes on. Apparently, it's 27 degrees Celsius at Suzuka, and with a track temperature of 32 degrees. You know, I went to Japan about 10 years ago. We went there for a holiday. And where I come from on the west coast of Canada, Vancouver, Rain City, Raincouver, the wet coast, you get the idea. It rains a lot where I come from. And you know what? We embrace it. We're used to it. You know, it is what it is. I mean, it's a beautiful place to live. I mean, there's so many things going on here. I mean, it is a wonderful place to live. It just rains a hell of a lot. But I remember when we went to Japan, it was in July, about 10 years ago. And I remember, you know, as you do when you're flying somewhere, as you get close to the destination or as you're taxiing to the airport or up to the airport, up to the gate there, usually the captain will come on and just they'll give you a brief synopsis of what the local weather is like. And I remember looking outside, I'm like, oh, it's dark and it's gloomy and it's rainy and it's windy. I'm like, hey, this is going to be just like home. It looks like a typical cool, damp and wet Vancouver day. And I thought this will be great. I mean, we'll get used to this. It'll be just like home. It's going to be a lot of fun. Anyways, you know, you go through the airport, everything's all nice and climate controlled and everything like that. And I just remember we had booked a shuttle to take us from the airport into Tokyo to our hotel. And I just remember walking out the front door at the airport, and it was like walking into a sauna. It was sort of high 20s in Celsius. I'm not sure off the top of my head what that is in Fahrenheit, but it was hot. It was humid. It was muggy. I'm like, this is not what the weather is like where I come from. And, you know, within about 30 seconds, you know, it's all sweaty and does really sticky and gross. I mean, it was a wonderful time. I mean, Japan is a really, really cool country, rich in history and a lot of really cool things on the modern side. It's a great place to go. I can't wait to go back. And of course, the one thing about the Japan that I found was really quite interesting and maybe kind of oddly or uniquely Japanese is it didn't matter where you looked. There was always a vending machine somewhere. You know, they're around in alleys, on street corners, in hotels, and in bars, and in restaurants. I remember we took a trip and we went up to Mount Fuji. There's like, even driving through some of the countryside, you just drive by and there's like a vending machine just on the side of the road, because I guess you never know when you need to get something. But anyways, that's something completely different. So I guess obviously I think the timing's going up. So yeah, Vettel still on top with a 130.386. Roman Grosjean second fastest in FP2 right now, a 130.569. obviously that is going to change. I mean, look who's still in the pits. Max Verstappen is still in picks. Charles Leclerc is still in the pits. Lewis Hamilton has only made he's just on an outlap. Valtteri Bottas is also on an outlap, so we'll wait and see. But anyways, just practice. Always interesting to see how what sort of indication or not that the practice sessions tend to be when it comes to indicate what things might happen in the race ahead. Anyways, let's talk about Mercedes as they go out onto the track there at Suzuka right now. Valtteri Bottas expects a decent step from the Mercedes upgrades that they're bringing to the Japanese Grand Prix, because they really have sort of switched around. I think that at least in performance wise since the summer break, it really has been Ferrari. And well, I know that they had a 1-2 finish at Russia the other week, Lewis Hamilton winning and Valtteri Bottas coming second, but you know, was that a bit of a false positive? Was that Ferrari shooting themselves in the foot? Of course that was not intended, but it was ironic that the safety car period that came about was due to the mechanical failure of Sebastian Vettel, and that really worked out to Mercedes' advantage. But you look at all the races basically since the summer break, and Ferrari really have managed to turn it around and for fine performance and do a lot better than they did in the opening half. Well, I guess up to the summer break is more than half a season, but it really was dire there for them. I mean, it's just everything seemed to be going wrong in the opening months in the first two thirds of the season at any rate. And it's been a pleasant surprise to see them come back and give Mercedes a bit of their run for their money. But it will be interesting to see now what tweaks that Mercedes is introducing, and do they really need to at this point? I guess you always have to develop the car. I mean, it's not like the world championship is in doubt in the drivers or the constructors' championships, and that's why I was just talking a little bit earlier about that article I saw there on Sky Sports, just the combinations that Lewis needs to in points and everything, and how the other drivers in the championship need to finish so he can win the world championship. I mean, it's when it comes to thing that, okay, well, you know, some Valtteri Bottas could still win, but all these bizarre combinations. I mean, I'm more likely to go out and buy a lottery ticket and become a multimillionaire tomorrow. I mean, it could happen, but it's not very likely. And I mean, the likelihood of Lewis Hamilton not finishing the next five races and Valtteri Bottas winning all of them or whatever the combination needs to be just isn't going to happen. Just like I've been saying for months now, that as Lewis's lead at the top of the the championship has slowly and steadily increased week in, week out, and as the month have passed by. Yeah, I mean, he could lose the world championship, but it's not likely. I mean, the incident that he had on a very slippery track at Hockenheim back in the middle of the summer, and that wonderful, crazy race that just threw everything out the window, literally, was so enjoyable to watch, because you don't see Lewis Hamilton ever make a mistake. And not that I want to see him crash out of the race or anything like that, but I mean, that was about the only time, the only circumstance that that you might expect to see Lewis Hamilton have an incident like he did. And even then, that wasn't really expected, but I mean, it did catch out the best of them that afternoon. But that aside, I mean, it is not likely that he's going to, I mean, there is a possibility he could suffer a mechanical breakdown. I mean, that's what happened way back in 2016 at the Malaysian Grand Prix when his engine let go. And that really, I think, was the moment that really, I wouldn't say it ended his championship challenge back in 2016, but it certainly put him behind the eight ball. And at that point, he really had to do everything he needed to do, while Nico Rosberg literally just had to cruise around and just be very conservative and safe and just make sure he got the points that he needed, even though it came down to a somewhat exciting finale at Abu Dhabi and the whole Lewis Hamilton slowing the pack down and backing Nico Rosberg into Max Verstappen and Sebastian Vettel that were quite a distance behind. But I mean, we're not going to see a situation where Lewis is going to get into an accident or his car is going to fail repeatedly. I mean, it's all but a done deal. But anyway, so just getting back to the matter at hand, I do find it interesting with only five races left that the Mercedes are still bringing technical upgrades to the car. But then again, I mean, there's a reason why these guys have been so good over the years, especially since 2014 in the turbo hybrid V6 era. And that just is that they're basically perfectionists, and you can tell that they love to go racing, and each race victory and each championship still means as much to them now in each and every year as it did way back when. And I mean, they really have been the gold standard over the past 4 or 5 years, and it really is amazing. But I did think it was an interesting revelation. I mean, also, you know, on the one hand, Bottas pleased with the upgrades that they're introducing to the car, but also I found it an interesting admission from team principal over at Mercedes, Toto Wolff, and he admits, and I think this is quite frank and forthright from Toto, that he really believes that the team's form to Ferrari over the past several races has suffered because of, well, A, the lack of upgrades in recent races, and then also the switch to focus to the 2020 car that led to a slowdown in the development of the current car. And well, even though that they do have some parts coming, but I really find that that kind of interesting, you know, just sort of building on what I was saying about Valtteri Bottas and the whole development and the upgrades of the car. And it is interesting that even though the championship is, or both championships are basically wrapped up for them, that that they're still, you know, they still feel that there's, I guess you could say, performance lost, or things that they haven't achieved what they thought they could achieve, just because they have taken their eyes off the prize, if you want to call it that, and focused more on the car for 2020. And because of that, they feel that they've obviously lost a bit of that advantage to Ferrari. And I mean, you got to give Ferrari credit. I mean, they look like they were going to be the odds-on favorite this year. I mean, going back to winter testing all the way back in February at Barcelona. And, you know, the car was supposedly 1.5 seconds a lap quicker than the Mercedes, and everybody else out there is like, oh, this is finally Ferrari's year. They've moved past that difficult end to 2018 that they had. And this is going to be a new era with a new team principal and Mattia Binotto, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all these different storylines. But obviously it just didn't turn out that way. But, you know, you got to give them credit. I mean, they took a very difficult first half of the season, and they've been able to turn it around. Whether that's more due to the fact that they were finally able to understand how the SF90 is working compared to the Mercedes, or if it is as Toto Wolff suggests that he believes it's just that they've focused more on putting their efforts into designing the car for next year rather than committing as much effort and manpower to developing the car that they have right now and just bringing the upgrades. And I think it's fascinating to see the teams still rolling out the upgrades this late in the season. But and Toto, and I quote here, he says, "I think the truth will be somewhere in the middle. I think they, Ferrari, have and continue to make big steps in straight line performance, and they have had a good car in Singapore, a very good car in Sochi, and if you put the dots together, you are setting the benchmark, and this is why they did this the last two weekends. In the same time, we haven't brought upgrades since a long time onto the car, and we probably haven't managed things as optimum as you can manage. But we've also been a bit unlucky with our own calls, and in the last few races, we could have won some of these races, and we didn't. And that bad luck turned to good luck in Sochi." Anyways, that's Toto Wolff weighing in. Anyways, time for the very first break here on the show this week. Don't go away. We'll be back after a very short message from our sponsors. Don't go away. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1, coming to you once again from the Vivid Seats studio. And of course, if you want to get in on the action, go check it out. The app is great. It's not just sports. It's concerts, it's festivals, it's theater, all sorts of things. If you download and install the app, make sure you use my promo code OVERTIME, and you could save up to $100 on your purchase for first-time users. Anyways, let's talk now about Ferrari and going back to the Russian Grand Prix. Sebastian Vettel is now admitting that he believes that defying the team orders was not right, and that was the whole issue that they had with Sebastian starting in P3 behind Charles and getting the toe down into that very long down that very long straightaway into turn one, and then not giving the position back. And I mean, it was ultimately remedied later in the race at the pit stops. They brought Charles in first and then kept Sebastian out a couple laps longer on rapidly degrading tires. So, I mean, they engineered it one way or another. But, I mean, I said at the time I didn't really have too big of an issue. I mean, Vettel was clearly faster, even though eventually he dropped out of the race. And I thought, you know, like, if Charles is going to come and he's going to hand over first place, then, you know, make him do it on the track. Otherwise, you know, do it in the pit stops. Although I'm not a big fan of that, really. But, hey, you know, whatever. It accomplishes what they need to do, and if they had that agreement, I guess that's okay. But you know, I guess that is fine. I guess you know, when you have some time to sit back and reflect, and you know, you're able to analyze that situation, you might see it a little bit different. But Vettel did have a meeting with Ferrari team principal Matteo Binotto last week at in Maranello, and he did sort of say it wasn't such of a big deal as maybe some people reading into it. And Seb said, and I quote, "Generally, everything is clear. Of course, you talk to each other. There was a conversation, but there were also other conversations. I wouldn't make such a fuss around the whole story. I think there were positive things in Russia as well. For this time this year, we had a very, very good pace in the race to hold up against a Mercedes. In other races, we might have been up front here and there, but in general, we are a bit slower. So there are positive and not so positive things. With the agreement, there was or wasn't, who is right and who isn't is perhaps not so important. But of course, I got the message at the radio to change the place, and I did not do it. And that certainly was not right." You know, I guess, you know, the hindsight is 2020, and you can go back and look at it, you know, in different ways. But certainly, I do think that it is an interesting situation to look at Ferrari. And I'm going to kind of lead into this next comment from Lewis Hamilton with this. And he believes that Ferrari are wrong to push Leclerc so early as the number one. I mean, he's outqualified Seb now in what, 7-8 races straight now or something like that? I mean, he said he had a couple of race victories. I mean, Vettel, I mean, you can make the argument that he benefited from a bit of luck to win in Singapore. But I mean, the guy was well overdue for a victory in my eyes. And, you know, I really didn't have an issue with him making or saying over the radio to make, if, you know, if Charles wants to take back first, make him come up here and earn it kind of thing. And I still think that this year, and despite all the issues that Sebastian Vettel has had, that he should still be the number one. I mean, it started out that way early in the season, and clearly he's not the number one guy anymore. And I thought that just by the benefit that he's been at Ferrari for a while, he's also four-time world champion, should mean something. And, you know, he's going into his final year of the current contract. He hasn't Ferrari in 2020. And I think next year, you know, why not just wipe the slate clean, you know, have no number one going into the season and make these guys fight for it. I mean, if Vettel is, you know, still as eager to win a world championship at Ferrari, if he's still committed to that, and if he still wants to get a new contract there, make him go out there and earn it. Make him fight for it. And then the same on the other side of that coin, if Charles wants to be the number one guy at Ferrari, make him go out there and earn it as well. I think that there's nothing wrong with those scenarios, and I think that if you do that next year, for example, you know, it could be an interesting situation. However, I mean, Matteo Binotto has clearly made that decision, and Lewis Hamilton says, well, you know, it's kind of a typical way that that Ferrari kind of do things, and sure, you know, they can do whatever they want. You know, I do find it interesting that you kind of see it unfolding right before our eyes in real time during the middle of a season. But hey, it is what it is. And it should be, I think, interesting over the past couple of races where they are over the next five races as we finish up the season here. And it seems to me that since the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, I mean, that was a hugely embarrassing, the incident that Vettel had when he spun out and then collected Lance Stroll when he's trying to put his car back on the track, and, you know, all the penalties and ending up right at the back of the field, and, you know, Charles going on to win that race and then, you know, basically being elevated to rock star level status by the end of that race and in the days immediately following. I mean, it'd been the first win at Monza since, what was it, 2010 or something for Ferrari. I mean, it'd been a good number of years. And, you know, so I guess that's really kind of tipped the balance in Charles's favor. But, you know, premature or not, it is what it is. And that's why I think it will be interesting to watch, not just the end for the end of this season, but next season as well. I mean, I don't know if you guys agree with Hamilton or not. I do agree with him to a certain extent. But, you know, Charles is, you know, he's publicly, he's saying all the right things. I mean, he's saying that the Ferrari interests are what he calls priority over the battle that he's having with Sebastian Vettel. And I mean, that's a smart thing to say, obviously. I mean, there are bigger things to look at. And I mean, Charles at the age of 21 is clearly just coming into his own in Formula One. I mean, the guy's been, let's admit it, I mean, he's been hugely impressive in Formula One since he joined the series last year in 2018 with Sauber Alfa Romeo Racing, or whatever they called it at the time. I mean, it was not a great car, the C38. And I mean, it was okay. I mean, it's sort of a lower middle of the pack kind of team as it was last year. But I mean, he consistently outperformed his then teammate, Marcus Ericsson, consistently. I mean, what he did to you know, in many instances, you know, putting that car in places and finishing races that, that he really had no business finishing, really, I think is, a testament to the the talent that this guy can really has to really get every little bit of performance out of that car and do things with it that most mortals would not be able to do. I mean, the way that the difference between himself and Marcus Ericsson were night and day. And I mean, Sebastian Vettel is kind of finding that to a certain degree. I mean, obviously there's a smaller gap between the talent level of Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc than say Charles Leclerc and Marcus Ericsson. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, Vettel, I mean, he has his criticism and his detractors, of course, but I mean, he didn't just fluke into four world championships. I mean, he's a very, very good driver still. You know, I think that Charles is wise to say what he's saying publicly. I mean, just let your racing do the talking when you're on the track. And I mean, if you're better than Sebastian Vettel, you don't need to go out and say it. I mean, it's just everybody's going to see it by what's happening on the track. And I think we've witnessed that over the past definitely over the past couple of months. I mean, it took a while for Charles to get that that first win. I mean, he had that unfortunate mechanical issue at Bahrain, which certainly robbed him of that that victory. I mean, he deserved to win that race. And then, he was somewhat rudely pushed out of the way at turn three at the A1 ring or Red Bull ring, whatever they call it, the Austrian Grand Prix, where Max Verstappen just, shoulder barged his way through Charles at that turn three when you go up the hill there and then basically into about a 90 degree corner to the right. But hey, I mean, Max had the best car in the afternoon and nobody was going to stop him on that day. I mean, it was an aggressive move, but at the end, I think that Max came pretty close up to the line, maybe put one foot on it, but didn't quite cross it with that maneuver. But since then, I mean, Charles has really, really come into his own and has really made a name for himself, obviously, and has really made a case to be the Ferrari number one driver. But I mean, we all know how bad the blood was between Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton. I mean, could we see something like that happen between Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel? I don't know. I mean, the thing is with Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton, I mean, it kind of simmered for a couple of years and it boiled over and blew up a couple of times along the way. I mean, Frosty and Icy was probably about as good as it ever got between those two guys. I mean, it was bad enough that, the upper management, the bigwigs at Mercedes actually had to come out and say that if things continued to be as bad as it was at its peak, that they would terminate the contracts of one or both of those drivers. I mean, it seems kind of incomprehensible now to think that you might, you threaten to rescind the contract of a guy like Lewis Hamilton. I mean, I don't know how serious they ever were. I think maybe, I mean, this is just my interpretation of the situation. I thought that comment was always aimed more towards Nico Rosberg rather than Lewis Hamilton, but hey, whatever. I mean, could we see the same thing between Vettel and Leclerc? I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I mean, it's gotten a little bit, I think they've gotten under each other's skin a little bit. I mean, Charles was obviously not happy in a couple of times recently, but I mean, there would have to be some pretty major things happen between the two of them. I mean, the thing is that Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg, they crashed out several times over the years. I mean, they had the coming together at Spa one year on the opening lap in which Lewis Hamilton ended up with a puncture and then ended up way down in the race order by the time it was all said and done because he had to basically tour all the way around the track on three wheels to replace the flat tire and just lost so much ground to the rest of the pack really early in the race. So, I mean, that ruined his day. I mean, there was Austria, there was Spain. I mean, there was numerous examples of the things that happened between these two guys. And I mean, I don't really see Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc as teammates beyond 2021. I just have a feeling. I mean, it just, I don't know. I just don't see Vettel coming back at Ferrari in 2021 unless maybe he gives them a big discount or something. But then again, if he goes, who would they bring along to replace him at Ferrari? And obviously, what would be a number two seat? But hey, that's a different conversation for a different day. But I mean, together, I think there's a lot that they can do, and Charles recognizes that, and he says, and I quote, "I want to beat Seb, and Seb wants to beat me, but the interests of the team as a whole have priority. It always takes a compromise. When you find yourself battling with your teammate, you think about it, and you know how what you do depends on the result of the work of 1,000 people." And I think that's very true, and I think that's a really wise thing, a very good observation for Charles to make, because obviously, I mean, what they get as the benefit, in the car, be it a good punk car or a bad car, I mean, it is the fruits of the labor of a lot of people, and of course, the bigger picture is what the team wants to accomplish as a goal. And I mean, we can go back and just revisit what we were talking about Mercedes earlier in the show. I mean, they still love to go racing. I mean, they love winning races and championships, and so you can tell what winning means to them. And when things don't go right for them, I mean, it seems to me that they really take it personally. And that's why I think it's a very good observation of Charles to make. Anyways, moving along here now, the next story, and this is from motorsport.com, and this is that Ferrari would only rue 2019 if it wasn't learning from errors. This kind of ties in a little bit to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, and that certainly is true. I mean, that... It seems kind of funny to say a team with the stature and the history and the resources of Ferrari would be in the situation that they were, to learn from their mistakes. You would think at this level and where they are, being one of the three top teams in the sport, that they wouldn't be there to begin with. But they've obviously had some struggles. And I think then rather just to kind of... go through the motions to a certain extent and not really delve into the issues that they've had with the car, they actually have taken the time to really delve into it and find out, they went for this model with less downforce, and of course that meant less grip in corners. It also meant that they were getting less downforce, and of course that means that they weren't generating enough heat into the tires, and of course there's less grip there. So they obviously have learned their lessons, they've applied it, and I think that ties in nicely to the comments that Toto Wolff was making, that the combination of Ferrari learning more about their car and upgrading it and making improvements on it, combined with Mercedes focusing more on the development of their 2020 car and maybe not developing this year's car as much, and bringing the upgrades in recent months as often and as frequent as they should. So that really, I think it is, it has to be a combination of both. I mean, to make up as much ground as they have on Mercedes seems it can't all be down to Ferrari. Obviously, they've done quite a bit on their side, but at the same time, Mercedes has lost a little bit of pace, just that they haven't kept up with anyone else. Anyways, time for another break here on the show. Still plenty more to come, so don't go away. We'll be back after another very short break, so don't go away. All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1, the podcast always up to speed with Formula One racing, and going back to the live timing at the Japanese Grand Prix. Just an hour left in FP2, and yeah, it's number 44, Lewis Hamilton, going purple in all three sectors, setting a time of 127.896, and that's quite a bit ahead of Sebastian Vettel. He's still hanging on in second position. Seb with a time of 128.392. 2, and Max Verstappen and Alex Albon, the two Red Bull drivers in 3rd and 4th, and Danny Kvyat, sorry, Valtteri Bottas currently 5th. He set a time of 129.469, so currently quite a bit off of the pace, but Max not too far off of Sebastian Vettel, and Alex Albon is right in there as well, and Max setting a time of 128.457, and Alex Albon setting a time of 128.668. Charles Leclerc currently in 7th in the classification in the timing right now, FP2. Charles sitting a time of 129.686. So obviously, I mean, he's almost 2 seconds off of Lewis Hamilton. So, you know, he's got some work to do. And I think come Sunday afternoon that gap between Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc is going to be a lot closer. But you look too, I mean, Charles has only run 6 laps compared to 10 so far for Lewis Hamilton in FP2, so still plenty more to go. And of course, I mean, they're only just about half an hour into the session. We still got about an hour to go, so we'll wait and see. Maybe we'll check in one more time before we wrap the show this evening. Anyways, talking about the team that's in the big three, and that is Red Bull. Their fuel supplier ExxonMobil is introducing new chemicals it hasn't used before in Formula One as part of a more powerful fuel that they brought to the Japanese Grand Prix. And I think they need something, because Red Bull really where Ferrari had struggled in the early part of the season, the first half of the season, Red Bull had stepped up and had really taken over as the number two team for a while there. And certainly since the summer break, it's turned around. So it'll be interesting to see if the new super fuel that they've brought to the Japanese Grand Prix is going to make a difference or not. And now there's a bit of a Red Bull tie-in here, and that's Renault's driver Danny Ricciardo, of course, the Honey Badger, many years as a Red Bull driver, has settled the legal dispute with his former advisor Glenn Beavis, which will keep a £10 million claim from having to go to court. There were no details released, but Beavis took action against Danny Ricca earlier this year. Basically, he was claiming that was money that he was owed as a commission, as part of the deal that saw him move from Red Bull to Renault last year. But Ricciardo felt that Beavis' claims were unjustified, and he said he was basically going to fight the whole thing. But apparently, they met recently out of court, and Ricciardo said that the whole deal is it's done, it's sorted, it's taken care of, but you know, he can't go into to any details. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, I'm not really surprised to see that. You always expect at time to times things like that happen, especially when you split with somebody else. You know, and I'm sure that if you're a guy like Glenn Beavis, you've got a very good head on your shoulders, and you know, you've got a very good brain for business, and know your way around contracts and things like that. So obviously, if they came to an agreement out of court, there was something that needed to be settled. So obviously it has been, and Ricciardo can just get back to focus on racing. And boy, you know, what a risk that he took to move to Renault for this year. I mean, if you look at the standings in the World Championship, of course, you have Max Verstappen, 4th in World Champion with over 200 points. You look at Danny Ric, 10th in the World Championship with only 34 points. And, you know, I mean, you look at what Alex Albon has done since switching over and replacing Pierre Gasly at Red Bull. I mean, Pierre Gasly is still 6th in the World Championship with 69 points, but Alex Albon, you know, he's currently sitting 8th in the championship with 52 points. And I mean, that's basically all the points. I don't have the exact number of points that he may have scored with Toro Rosso before the switch beforehand, but I mean, you got to think that he's going to surpass Gasly's total by the time the season is over. So, I mean, he's acquitted himself very well. But, I mean, the point I was trying to make is when you look at Max with 212 points, I would think that, Danny Ric would be up there somewhere as well. And I think that was part of the reason that they switched Gasly in favor of Alex Albon, is that if Gasly had been able to perform better and get better results throughout the first first half of the season before the summer break is that Red Bull would be sitting higher in the Constructors' championship than they were. So, I mean, Gasly seems to be in a bit of a sweet spot. You know, he seems to be in his comfort zone at Toro Rosso. I mean, that's a bit of a development team. So, I mean, where does he go from here? That's a great question. Who knows? You know, it seems like... let's just say I don't see him going back to Red Bull for next year. I know they said they're keeping their options open and, you know, they're basically looking at Alex Albon's time there for the remainder of this year's, you know, a long audition for next year. So I don't know. I think Gasly had his shot and it was kind of a swing and a miss. And, well, we'll see in the long term, you know, Toro Rosso being a development team that it is. And if, you know, assuming Gasly's not going to go back to Red Bull next year, how long are they going to keep him in there knowing that it basically paves a way to you know, the big main Red Bull team that Gasly, although you know, a decent driver, may be taking up the seat of another younger, hotter prospect that maybe could go on to partner Max Verstappen. Anyways, that is what it is, you know, just a thought. But you know, let's move on. And this is kind of all Mercedes related. I mean, there's been a lot of Mercedes so far in the show this week, but this is a bit of a related one. And Mercedes admit that Mercedes said that McLaren, I was almost going to read this back to front, why would McLaren say getting Mercedes is a risk? But Mercedes has admitted that that McLaren's supply deal is a risk, and this is Toto Wolff just acknowledging the fact that the McLaren is going to be getting, I was going to say Renault, they're getting Renault engines right now, but they will be getting a Mercedes customer engines in 2021, rekindling that partnership that was successful for so many years. And Toto Wolff is just saying that it has the potential to become a rival to their own team. And that's true. I mean, you look in the, you know, what McLaren is doing right now. I mean, they are the best of the rest this season. I mean, they're not dead last like they were there for a couple of seasons. I mean, since they switched to Renault, the progression has been, you know, steady and upwards. And they're looking very, very good this year. I mean, they are a very good midfield team. But, I mean, the big question is whether or not they can go from being a good midfield team into being, you know, a top contender in Formula One like they were for years. I mean, I struggle to reconcile and accept McLaren for where they are because, I mean, I grew up in the era of Alan Prost and Ayrton Senna, and then beyond that, Kimi Raikkonen, and then, I'm missing Mika Häkkinen winning a couple world championships in there. I mean, they were the top team for many years at different times in Formula One. To see them sink to the level and to the depths that they have over the past decade, slowly, and then, you know, watching them there at, you know, the early days of the Honda partnership a couple of years ago. I mean, boy, was it ever painful to watch. So it is nice to see, but I mean, ultimately, whether or not they become a rival to Mercedes, well, that remains to be seen. I mean, they certainly are going in the right direction. And I think you have to give a lot of props to Zach Brown, the CEO there. I mean, he had a tough, tough job, and that job still is not over. I mean, they are trending in the right direction, but ultimately, will they be able to cross that threshold from best of the rest and a very good midfield team to becoming a legit contender to the likes of Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull? That is the big question. I mean, obviously, if they could become a contender for Red Bull in the shorter term, unless Red Bull are able to you know, take that next step next year with Honda, and you know, there's been a lot of talk this week that the Honda engine will have the same power output next year that's at least comparable to you know, Mercedes and also Ferrari. Excuse me. It's been a long day and I forgot to bring a glass of water into the studio here. Anyways, I can see why Toto Wolff is you know thinking that way, because it may seem a bit of a stretch now, and it might be you know, a little bit humorous to hear him say that. But I mean, you look at the difference between McLaren and Renault. Obviously, Renault works team with their own engine it compared to McLaren, who has a customer Renault. I mean, they've been a better team than the Renault works team all year long. So could they do the same thing with a Mercedes engine in the back of the car? I think that's a little bit of a long shot. I think that's a little bit of a stretch, but I mean, they do have very, very good people there. And I think that is something that that Zach Brown really deserves a lot of credit for, is that he hasn't come into the situation, tried to fix it all himself. I mean, I think he's come in, he's analyzed it, and he's brought in some very, very good people to take care of business and run the team. And looks like Andreas Seidel, the team principal that was brought over from the Porsche LMP1 project, was a very good signing. You have Jill DeFerrin, the former racing driver, as a sporting director, whatever his job is. You got James Key, who's the technical director that was brought over from Toro Rosso. I mean, there's a lot of very, very good people in the team now, but you know, to go that that extra step or two, I mean, it's more than a step. It'd be a quantum leap to go from where they are now to become a rival of Mercedes. I mean, I think that I could see where Toto's making that that leap, that connection. But to me, that seems to be like a little bit like a bridge too far. Anyways, I mean, sticking with that now, McLaren, just talking about it, they say that the deal to get Mercedes engine is going to leave them, quote, nowhere to hide. And that comes from Andreas Seidel, the team principal. And, you know, it's true. I mean, when you have the best engine in Formula One, and Zach Brown, the CEO, he's talking about it and just saying that, sorry, and it wasn't Zach Brown, it was Andreas Seidel, was saying that that the Mercedes engine is the benchmark in the turbo hybrid era. And that is true. I mean, more recently, Ferrari reportedly have the most powerful power units. And that certainly we've seen this year. Especially in the past several races. I mean, just the straight line advantage that they have with the low downforce model and the engine that they have really is a winning combination. And that's a big part of why Charles Leclerc was able to win those couple of races that he did. I mean, it really did help out and give him that little bit of extra advantage when he needed it the most. But I mean, you can see why they would make that comparison. I mean, Mercedes has just been better for longer and more consistent. So they obviously are very, very excited to get those in the back of their car for 2021. But also they were saying that that they didn't consider Ferrari engines or building their own engine. I mean, there was talk that McLaren might build their own engine at one point. But I mean, that would be... That to me always seemed to be a bit of a stretch. I mean, we saw how Honda struggled when they came back into Formula One and just how difficult it was for them to get up to speed, because I mean, everybody else like Renault, Ferrari, Mercedes, they'd all been really investing the time, and even before the launch or the introduction of the engines back in 2014 and when Honda came back in, they were at a disadvantage because they were already several years behind in the game and were basically having to develop the engine and improve upon it on the fly in real time. And we saw that obviously with disastrous results at time. But Zach Brown felt that that Ferrari engines would be a bit of a what he called a brand clash with the roadside of the McLaren brand. You know, I guess it is what it is. I mean, it's a little bit separate, but certainly I can understand, why he would, think that way and why he'd want to avoid that. But, it is, I think, interesting that that this Mercedes-McLaren partnership has been rekindled. And I'm looking forward to seeing, what they can do with it. And they really do not have anywhere to hide, just like I was talking about a couple of minutes ago, that quote from Andreas Seidel. Because that was the thing. I mean, when they're having all the issues with Honda, I mean, that was always the thing. It was like, no, it's not the car. Our car is one of the best. We have one of the best chassis in the entire the series and in all of Formula One. It's all down the Honda engine, and that slowly that tune changed over time. The engine wasn't great, but the chassis isn't quite as good as we thought. And even last year they were saying that a little bit as well, but I mean this year they've improved a lot, and it definitely is trending in the right direction. But still a very, very long way to go before they can get up and to the top there again and challenge the likes of Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull. I mean, if they can maybe try and get a podium here or there, I think that would be the next big thing, that the big step that they could take in their revival. And who knows, maybe they've got what it takes to do that. Anyways, time for one last time out here on Scuderia F1. So don't go away. We'll be back after this short break from our sponsors. All right, well, welcome back to the show. Just a couple more pieces of news, and then I just want to just talk very briefly about the Japanese Grand Prix. And there's been a lot of news, you know, stories coming out this week about the rule changes for 2021. You know, there's one here on motorsport.com. It's entitled F1 Teams, quotes, pushed and pulled all over by 2021 rule talks. You know, there's talks about delays in introducing the rules or publishing them and finalizing will mean that the car designs are being called rough, whatever that means, that maybe that not everybody will be able to design the car that you know, the best car under the new regulations, because it's just going to take you know, a while to get them put through. And I mean, it really has been a saga. I mean, this has been going on for so long. I don't even remember now when Ross Brawn first premiered or previewed that their concept for the you know, 2021 car. I mean, it's got to be well over a year ago now. I mean, could it even have been like summer of 2018 or before? I mean, it's been quite a while. I mean, everybody was really excited. I mean, the car, the concept car looked great, and we're all like, oh, Formula One cars are going to look like that. 2021 and beyond is going to be awesome. And I mean, it's gone into almost, well, at least from the outside, like a sort of a, well, it appeared to be cryogenically frozen, or just completely had dropped off in the map. So it's been frustrating from that point of view. And I mean, this just comes from the you know, somebody that that's a fan. I mean, I'm not even on the inside, of course. But I mean, it must be really frustrating, because I mean, of course, they're working and designing and building their cars for next year, even though 2019 is not over. But I mean, they do design cars and concepts, you know, quite a ways down the road. So I can imagine that that not having any clarity or any finality on the 2021 rules is very, very frustrating. But I mean, it just really is all over the place. And this is kind of a little bit how I expected it to be. I mean, at least nobody really up and up threatened to leave Formula One. I mean, Ferrari would be the you know, the team you would suspect most to in that situation, that, oh yeah, well, you know, we don't like the way that the sport is going, you know, we're going to pull out, and you know, we're not going to be in Formula One in 2021. I mean, that was kind of like a sort of a standard Ferrari move to kind of, you know, use their historical status within the sport to kind of throw their weight around, because, you know, by saying that that they were planning to leave because they didn't like proposed rule changes or whatever, that just gave them a little bit more clout at the bargaining table, because nobody really wants to see them leave, and, you know, concessions are made. But it really has dragged on a lot. And I mean, you know, there was, I think Toto Wolff said once, I mean, it was very non-committal. It was more like, well, you know, we'll stay in Formula One as long as you know, the series suits what we like to do, and race you know, and race in the way that we like to race, and that was about it. You know, I mean, I'm kind of really parsing and paraphrasing there, but you know, it really, I thought that this would be sorted out a while ago, but that I think is more based on my my own personal preference and wishes to have these rules clarified and in place more than anything else. So it really is sort of getting a little bit more messy. But Red Bull's chief engineer Paul Monahan said it was a big challenge, and he said, quote, "We want to challenge these guys," course talking about Mercedes and Ferrari, "so we are obliged to look at the 2021 regulations now, and as it has been discussed, the negotiation is ongoing as to how they will fall out. So our resources are being pushed and pulled in many directions, and the change proposed for 2021 is enormous. It is not an evolution as we have from 2016 into 17, you may argue, and it's going to be mighty challenging." So it's really going to be fascinating to see what's going to happen to 2021. And stay tuned. That's all I can really say. And you know, like I was saying just now, I mean, just because of that, the next article I was reading, this was also from motorsport.com, is just because of the lack of clarity and decision on the rules, is that a lot of the designs, you know, will just, you know, these cars will get designed and built later than they usually do. So it might be difficult for a lot of people to, you know, really do what they want to do. But the one thing that is kind of interesting is that, you know, the concept car that that they have out, you know, has one of these aero screens, which is basically the halo with like a Perspex cover around it. So it kind of looks more like a canopy you might see on a fighter jet more than a Formula One car. I mean, they did try those a couple of years ago, but, you know, they've introduced that in IndyCar, and they've got like anti-glare screening on it. They got heaters on it apparently as well to keep it from fogging up. So, I mean, now that, you know, this cockpit safety has been around for a couple of years, I mean, we're starting to see some different things coming out, you know, whether or not Formula One is going to stick with the halo or if they're going to move to an aero screen, that remains to be seen. I mean, the halo was always more of an interim kind of thing. Just they needed to get that safety device onto the car to protect the drivers. And of course, driver safety always has to be, you know, one of the number one things out there. So, but does this aero screen look better now? I don't know. I think it's more of a personal thing than anything else. And, well, I mean, it looks okay, but it's funny, as much as I really detested the halo when it came in a couple of years ago, I've sort of come to accept it now. And now when I see something else different than to the halo, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I like it as much as the halo now. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just easily persuaded when it comes to things like that. So maybe you shouldn't take my word for it at all. But anyways, just sticking with these 2021, Lewis Hamilton says he's seen the data from the research for these cars, and he thinks that it's really suggesting that it's going to make it easier for cars to follow each other in 21. And he says that it looks quote unquote great. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. So I don't know what that means, but if Lewis is impressed by the data, then that I think that's a good indication that maybe they're going in the right direction with these regulations. So I guess ultimately we'll have to wait and see how it pans out and what the final version is. But, you know, just sort of sticking with it, 2021 and beyond. So the stakeholders of Formula One have been debating what direction they should go in with engines and power units after 2024. And Renault are actually pushing for electrification, and Mercedes are keen to stick with the current formula. And you can see the case for both, because Renault haven't really been able to nail it when it comes to the the V6 turbo hybrid engines, whereas Mercedes have been the gold standard ever since 2014. I mean, they're pretty cool, and I mean, I can see the argument obviously to go to an all electric engine for at some point in the future. But the thing is, it's got to be the same performance wise. I mean, I don't want to see these cars go backwards and become more like Formula E cars. If they can find a way to make the electric engines with the same power output as the engines they have now, or the normally aspirated engines, then that would be great, and be able to go a full race distance. And I mean, obviously that's always been a bit of a thing for Formula E, but Formula E is its own certain different series, and they've got their own way of doing things. But Renault F1 boss Cyril Abiteboul says that the sport is really being left in danger of being left behind in the world unless they start planning for a formula that's more relevant to future road cars and is cost effective for manufacturers. And that is one knock against the current V6 engines, is that, I mean, even though they are technological wonders, they are hugely expensive to design and maintain and build. So I mean, it is it is a huge investment. I mean, whether or not they could reduce that cost with electric engines, that remains to be seen. But certainly this is a discussion I'll be honest, I mean, this has come around a lot sooner than I ever expected. So again, I think that's one of those situations we have to stay tuned and see what happens. Anyways, just looking here at the live timing at FP2 at the Japanese Grand Prix, just over half an hour left to go. Valtteri Bottas is now the fastest in the session, and Valtteri has set a time of 127.785. That's exactly a tenth of a second quicker than Lewis Hamilton. Lewis's time is 127.885. Max Verstappen now has slid into third place with a 128.066, and Sebastian Vettel fourth with a 128.392. Charles Leclerc is he's improved a little bit. He's currently in sixth behind Alex Albon in the Red Bull, and Charles's time is a 128.424, so he's about 6.5 tenths off the fastest time in FP2 at the very moment. All right, well, let's just talk a little bit about the race itself. Obviously, the big question this week is whether or not the typhoon is going to impact the country of Japan as a whole and affect a lot of things going on. Of course, Rugby World Cup is still going on, as well as the Japanese Grand Prix. So we hope for everybody there that that the bad weather does not hit land and it blows itself out before then, but it's looking like there might be something to impact it. Anyways, just in general, the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka, it is a 53-lap race with a 5.8-kilometer-long lap, more or less. Race distance is just over 307 kilometers long, and Kimi Raikkonen has the lap record, which is a 131.540, which he set back at the Japanese Grand Prix way back in 2005. So going back to last year, it was Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas locking out the front row for Mercedes. Max Verstappen and Kimi Raikkonen were on row two, and well, this is not anything you expect to say anytime soon, but row three was Romain Grosjean and Brendan Hartley, and they were made up the third row of the grid. The race itself, Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas coming home first and second. Max Verstappen and Danny Ric coming home third and fourth for the Red Bull, and Kimi Raikkonen and Sebastian Vettel coming home fifth and sixth. And of course, last year, Sebastian Vettel and Max Verstappen having some contact. Let's put it out there. They had some contact out there on the race. But just in general, going back over the past several seasons, the Japanese Grand Prix has been an all Mercedes thing. Michael Schumacher, he holds the record with six Grand Prix victories at in the Japanese Grand Prix, most recently way back in 2004. Lewis Hamilton has won there five times, including four times since 2014. Sebastian Vettel himself has won there four times. Last time he won there was back in 2013, that is. McLaren have won the most races there in total. They've won their 9 Grand Prix in Japan. Ferrari has won 7. But it's, I mean, the real story is here that over the past five seasons since 2014, Lewis Hamilton has won the race four times. The only time he hasn't won it was 2016 when it was won by Nico Rosberg. And then before that, Sebastian Vettel was the guy that was the master of Suzuka. I mean, Seb won it four times between 2009 and 2013. So obviously he would be keen to win there again this weekend. But, you know, I mean, Suzuka, it is a classic track. I've always loved it. I mean, like I've said many times on this show, that I grew up in the era of Ayrton Senna, Alain Prost, Nigel Mansell, and guys like that. And the one thing that really stands out in my mind is that that incident between, what was it, in 1988, I believe it was, when Senna and Alain Prost famously collided and took each other out of the race at the Japanese Grand Prix. I mean, that was one of those relationships very much like Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg, where the two teammates, Senna and Prost, just did not get along. But I think as bad as Rosberg and Hamilton was, I think Senna and Prost was even more so. Although, I mean, they did reconcile, I think, to a certain extent. I mean, Prost, I believe, was one of the pallbearers at Senna's funeral after his untimely death at Imola back in 1994. Anyway, that is a bit of a sad note to end the show. So try and maybe find a little bit happier way to end that one. But, you know, it is a great track. I really enjoy the Japanese Grand Prix. And, you know, one of these days, I know I say this all the time, one of these days I want to be able to go and attend more Grand Prix. It's always a little bit difficult here, you know, where I am in the world and just, you know, with the family and everything like that makes it difficult to get away for races. But Japan would have to be, I think, one of my top destinations to go to go and watch a Grand Prix. I think it would be really, really cool to go and watch the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka. So I would really, really like to do that one of these days. So anyways, before I go here, you know, I've had some nice messages from people this week. You know, maybe we should start doing some shout-outs on the show here one of these days. You know, I do like to hear from all of you. I like to hear you weigh in and you know, on whatever the topic is, or bring any feedback to the show. So, I mean, you know, if you're listening somewhere, you know, let me know where you are in the world. Send me an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com or tweet me on Twitter. Let me know where you are, who your favorite driver is, favorite team is, and I'll read some of these out on the show at some point in the future. Or, you know, if you want to help the show grow, leave a nice review if you enjoy the show on Apple Podcasts, or if you download the show, or share it with a friend. And another nice review on Apple Podcasts this week from Newtown 1978. And he writes, Mark and Kevin bring a wealth of collective F1 knowledge to this podcast and consistently take their analysis to the next level. Definitely a cut above and the best F1 podcast out there. And that was wonderful, very kind message. And I really appreciate that a lot. Anyways, time for me to get out of here. It's starting to get very, very late here on the west coast of Canada. I still have to work tomorrow, but hey, it is Thanksgiving in Canada here this weekend, so that means, well, unfortunately, some of you will have to go and work on Monday. We will be enjoying our turkey and a nice long weekend, so certainly enjoy, looking forward to that. Always a nice weekend to spend time with family up here on Thanksgiving, so really looking forward to the next couple of days. I've only got a half day at work tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that as well. So not really a huge amount of time off, but it is a kind of a mini 3.5 day holiday for me, so certainly looking forward to it. And of course, looking forward to the Japanese Grand Prix, so I hope you all enjoy that, and we will be back after the weekend to wrap it up and cover all the latest F1 news. So hope you'll join us then, and until next time, thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Ciao for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to scuderiaf1pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com.